There's more fallout over Ye and his recent anti-Semitic comments. Adidas has ended its relationship with the artist formerly known as Kanye West. LA Rams player Aaron Donald and the Boston Celtics' Jaylen Brown have dropped out of Ye's sports marketing agency. But Ye has been controversial for years, for long before he was known as Ye. In 2018, he said slavery was a choice. In 2013, he sold merchandise with prominent Confederate flags on it. So why are his recent comments crossing the line? Karen Atiyah is columnist for The Washington Post, and Chenjerai Kumanyika is assistant professor in NYU's Arthur Carter Journalism Institute. Welcome to both of you.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with you, Chenjerai, because Ye's anti-Semitic comments, as I mentioned, are just the latest in a long string of comments that have drawn outrage for about a decade. So why were companies like Adidas and The Gap comfortable with him before and not comfortable now?
No, I think it's a great question that we really should be asking. I mean, you know, and first of all, I should just say, you know, Kanye's comments are absolutely unacceptable, and they're coming at a time when we've actually seen this rhetoric translate into real violence. You know, I was in Charlottesville and saw both the swastikas that happened and the violence that happened, so it's real for me. I just want to say that. But it is curious that he was able to say, like, slavery is a choice, to kind of put in, you know, sort of sell the Confederate flag, actually. And that those things, companies felt fine to be associated with him. So it's a good question.
So, Karen, you write that the U.S. loves to inundate people with coverage of black male figures embodying the archetype of the dumb, violent black servant eager to please the white masters. Can you explain?
Sure. So, you know, I think and I wrote that in relation to Ye and Herschel Walker, but I think in the case of Ye and all this controversy, the antics with the Confederate flag saying that slavery was a choice, it just plays into this sort of archetype of a quote-unquote free-thinking black man who's breaking from the pack of black groupthink, right? And you know, making white people feel good, feel okay, feel like he really has something new and something special to say. And so I think for a long time, it wasn't even just that there was black outrage. There, to be fair, there were a lot of black folks, myself included, who were like, this is not okay. These comments about slavery are not okay. But at the same time, he was praised for being some sort of subversive genius by doing these things. And I think that's why he was able to get away with it for a long time.
You also wrote, Karen, and I wanted to get Chenjerai's reaction to this as well. You wrote, black folks have been speaking out against Kanye for years, but to no avail. For all the fuss about the woke mobs and cancel culture, this whole episode makes clear that black people don't have the structural power to cancel public figures who traffic in anti-blackness. Understanding that anti-Semitic comics are always awful and often lead to really negative real-life consequences for people. I wonder, Chenjerai, what you think about this, that it's hard for there to be consequences when someone makes an anti-black comment.
Absolutely. Well, I think even the whole conversation and discourse around cancel culture needs to be deeply interrogated because, for example, we've had presidents who were sort of in a moment of cancellation because of things that they might have seen on an Access Hollywood tape and elected to the presidency. So meaning that cancellation and definitely trafficking in all kinds of racial commentary. But I think what's important also about this Kanye situation is that there's a real risk here that we limit this to Kanye. He should absolutely be held accountable. But the reason why his comments resonate with, quite frankly, large parts of America is because they are in some ways at different times have been deeply American. Let's not forget when we talk about anti-Semitism that, people in the Third Reich looked to the American model, as James Whitman has talked about, as they shaped the Nuremberg laws. And of course, I'm doing historical work on, you know, the 19th century and police. You see anti-Semitism throughout that history. Anti-Semitism has been very real in American history. So, and anti-Blackness is very real. So there's a way in which I think that these are American ideas at different times. And we want to be careful of is not to limit them to make Conley look at such an outlier that we don't get to the root of the problem.
I mean, I'm the product of a Black grandfather and Jewish grandmother. And so, Karen, this idea that anti-Semitism, racism, regardless of what group is targeted, that's can lead to awful consequences and sometimes violence against certain groups. That would imply that no matter what group is targeted, the response should be the same. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And at the end of the day, you know, when we talk about anti-Blackness, anti-Semitism, all of these are, you know, the products of, you know, white, European, Christian constructs. And in many ways, our ideas, what we have, what we think about in terms of race and the other are rooted in millennia of the persecution of Jewish people. So it's very, very, very much tied up in the same fight against white supremacy. So I would hope that at the very least this moment, as insane and as dangerous and crazy as it is, it's a moment to really reflect on what intergroup solidarity against white supremacy and these baked-in ideas should look like.
But Chenjerai, you mentioned President Trump, former President Trump. He has years history of making racist comments, sexist comments, but he's still arguably the most powerful member of the Republican Party. So do you think Ye is being held to a different standard than others are?
Well, what I think is that no one is entitled to these platforms, whether you're talking about sponsorships with huge companies, whether you're talking about the ability to speak on our most influential media and news platforms. But there seems to be a real confusion about what free speech means. And free speech seems to have been translated to mean that people who are billionaires spewing reactionary and fascist rhetoric somehow are entitled to a platform. And I think that regardless of whether it's the president or Kanye, they shouldn't be held to a different standard. I think that, you know, the reality is that, sure, Kanye has lost some sponsorships, but let's not act like because Kanye is a Black person that we forget that he's also a billionaire, extremely influential. And I think that what we in media have to be careful of is to not actually extend his influence in the under the guise of canceling him.
But Karen, it's possible, is it not, that Ye will now be embraced even tighter by the conservative ecosystem, and that will be his market going forward, and this will yet further divide people on how to respond to racism, anti-Semitism, and sexism?
Sure. You know, we've totally seen that as a playbook, you know, controversial and you know, figures who want to feel free to spew bile into the public discourse, finding their audiences within the right wing infrastructure, media infrastructure. And so that is entirely possible. I mean, there were the rumors or the speak that Kanye was going to be involved in perhaps buying Parler, the ultra right wing platform. Who knows what will come of that now. But he already is, you know, associating with these figures, you know, like Candace Owens and obviously, you know, Donald Trump. So I wouldn't be surprised if he chose to, you know, find his new next act there. But we'll just have to see.
Karen Atiyah is a columnist for The Washington Post. Chenjerai Kumanyika is assistant professor in NYU's Arthur Carter Journalism Institute. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.